This podcast is part of the Gunna Geek Network. The opinions expressed may not represent other podcasts or affiliates of Gunna Geek. Check out more podcasts at GunnaGeek.com and get ready because geekness starts in 3, 2, 1.
Critics say we should be watching these movies. But three geeks will put it to the test. I'm the movie dude Eric. Along with me are
Johnna Lobster
and Kent.
And this is Art House Legends.
This episode we're discussing April Fool's Day, starring Deborah Foreman, Deborah Goodrich, Thomas F. Wilson, Leah Pinsent, and directed by Fred Walton.
This podcast may use adult language, so parental discretion is advised. This is also a spoiler-filled podcast, so we recommend that you've seen the film first before joining the conversation. Please make your way to the balcony and enjoy the show.
Yes, yes.
God,
finally, a true art house classic.
I love 80s horror.
This is definitely the one that set the standard and set it high, right?
I mean, forget about Halloween, forget about Friday the 13th. This is the only date you need to mark on your calendar for scares.
And in this particular film, April Fool's Day apparently lasts 3 days.
Oh, it is like Easter weekend, baby. It is a whole deal.
Cinco de Mayo.
They take April Fool's Day. Now, like, I've heard of practical jokes and pranks and stuff. Like this is like an extended, like, forget about like the main mind fuck. Like, it is a constant thing of like accidental stabbings and like multiple trick chairs and exploding cigars, which, like, I thought he got that cigar out of his suitcase. Did he pack an exploding cigar?
No, he found it in a cigar box.
But at any rate, like, this is crazy. And forget about the heroin paraphernalia and the BDSM gear.
But I guess for me specifically, April Fool's Day is, how do I, this is a movie is that makes you think that it's going to be one thing, and it is something completely different. And while I don't really be all for that, this movie definitely created some frustrations.
Sexual frustration, right? Because you wanted to be on that island. I wanted to be on that island. They were having fun.
Okay, so before we actually talk about the movie, let's talk about how a movie like this could even be made, because Paramount at this point is on a high with the Friday the 13th movies, right? We're talking about, like, they just did, like, Friday the 13th Part 4, if I'm not correct, when they were making this. And, in fact, the producer of the Friday the 13th movies was the one responsible for getting this one made. And this, you know, they got the screenwriter, Danilo Bach, who, you know, was, I think, on staff at Paramount at the time. He was also working on Beverly Hills Cop 2, the script for that as well, this one. And so they were trying to make a different type of horror movie. And understand that when it comes to the 80s slasher films, I am all for innovation and doing something different, because let's be honest here, you know, Mike Myers had already been run to the ground by this point. Freddy was starting to get a little annoying. We're needing something a bit different here. And April Fool's Day, especially the poster, I remember that poster. That poster stayed with me from the 80s. Because I was always kind of curious as to what's going on here. And especially with it being associated with possibly one of the most annoying holidays to be, you know, to be. I don't know, I was very curious about this, and when I saw it, yeah, I got a reaction I wasn't expecting. But I guess let's go ahead and let's talk about it. Okay, so this does follow the standard 80s horror slasher, right? We got a whole bunch of young people in this movie, they're all out of college, right? They're college graduates.
No, this is it's their last semester of college. They're all seniors. It's spring break, right before they graduate. Cause that's why they're all like talking about their future and their career and this and that.
And
they're all like vaguely, they're like friends of friends. So like in the Facebook world, these are friends of friends. Like you might have like one or two mutual friends, and for them, their mutual friends are all Muffy.
Yeah.
I almost said the other name.
Yes. But they're all friends of Muffy. I love the fact that the first character we see is, in fact, Muffy, as she's preparing things and grabbing the Jack in the Box and kind of setting us up I think that there's no way to really truly appreciate what's going to be happening in this film from the opening, but it definitely gives us this feeling there's something off kilter. And then we meet the group as they're coming out to the island. Now, an island in the middle of nowhere. Well, this isn't a trope in itself.
It should be.
Yeah. I don't know. Part of me just felt the last movie that I saw with an island in the middle of nowhere with a lot of evil going on was House of the Dead.
That's right.
And that is not something that you want to have in your head. I didn't want to be thinking about Woodland Raves with a bunch of Sega paraphernalia around.
Well, I was thinking Club Dread, the Broken Lizard, the follow-up to Super Troopers.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. But that was a beach. A beach.
They were on an island, I think.
But that was tropical, wasn't it?
It was, you're right. This is like... This
totally
felt
different.
Like, this felt like Nantucket or Martha's Vineyard or some places that I've seen in like the richy places of the world.
Could be Minnesota, land of a place with a lot of lakes, and there might be bigger islands in them that you could support a house.
Now, did it start on April Fool's Day, or was April Fool's coming up? Because these guys were pulling pranks right from the harbor, which...
I think day one is April Fool's. And
yeah, because the thing is that...
Yeah.
I don't think it matters. It's just like the whole time. Like, it's like the Christmas season. It's and anything goes...
But the movie's called April Fool's Day.
So you think that's the day... Are you saying that's the day that they're leaving? Or the first day that they spend on the island?
That's the question, because if this is not April Fool's Day and you're starting to pull off your April Fool's jokes like a few days in advance, then you're just being douchebag.
When they're least suspected.
Well, the fact that it causes an injury... because of their frolickery. Although the fact that it's Biff Tannen that's involved raise Thomas L.
Wilson,
ladies and gentlemen. Now, part of me thought to myself, wow, we're seeing the origins of Biff Tannen. And then I found out this was made a year after.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was like ninth billed in the credits. And this is a year after Back to the Future, which was like one of the highest grossing films of
that
year.
Well, I think the cast is in order of appearance.
No, he's right at the beginning.
No, he was not the ninth.
He probably would have been like the fourth or fifth, but I mean, you see the tugboat guy before.
The cast is in alphabetical order by last name.
That makes sense.
He comes at the end, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. If I were
Mr. Wilson, I would have fired my agent on that one, because let's be honest here, they could have marketed him, and the fact that he had a lot of screen time in this film, they could have easily.
I wonder if it's one of those things, because Back to the Future was 85, right? And this came out, we're guessing,
86.
In the spring of 86. maybe it was kind of one of those things where he might have done this before, like he might have filmed this before Back to the Future blew up.
It doesn't matter because they print the casting at the time of release, so it would have been 86. The advertising would have been 86 advertising. Back to the Future had already been a huge success. Just having him on the poster would have. He was in the poster, but you know, if they would have made him more prominent on the poster, I mean, they could have.
And you,
they could have.
And you kind of see that with like the X-Men movies. I mean, Jennifer Lawrence doesn't get top billing, even though she's like a major actress, and it's like in these like ensemble casts. Roles like you end up, it's not always about like the draw, the box office draw.
Well, that's just the thing. It's marketing, but you know, for it's the 80s, and they were trying to sell this more as a Friday the 13th knockoff more than they were trying to sell this as Biff Tannen type thing. So I'll take it for what it is, but I will say though that it was very nice to see Thomas Wilson in this film. It was nice to know somebody
have a familiar face on the island.
I will say one thing that have y'all seen his stand-up comedy by any chance? Thomas Wilson,
I've heard it's actually pretty good.
He's really good, and the funny thing is that he is like uber conservative Catholic, and so seeing him play about with this kind of bromance that he has going on with that one guy that almost didn't it feel like those two were kind of like actually gay and they were just uncomfortable admitting to it a little bit.
I kind of got at the end that they just were keeping things very down low.
I don't know if they've ever acted upon it, but it felt like, especially when they're in bed together and they are kind of joking about hiding the sausage. to me, it felt like they were laughing at it because they were too afraid to admit that there's something there. And they did have really good chemistry. Those two actors really did, because they're the ones that are joking on the pier, right? They're the ones that are goofing off and nearly get the one guy killed.
Except with their prank. Except he survives. He's in the hospital recovering. He's fine.
Yeah,
I was with him today. He's fine. I don't know. I love the casting in this, and again, it's mostly unknowns. And I think at this point, probably Tom Wilson is still an unknown. I've listened to his podcast. That he does. He does a podcast called Big Pop Fun that's pretty good. He does a lot of interviews and stuff. But and of course, I remember him as the voice of Matt Bluestone from Gargoyles.
He does a lot.
For me, he will be Maniac from the Wing Commander series.
There you go. Oh, that's right.
I love
Maniac.
No. He wasn't. Just Maniac. He was the Maniac. He was awesome as Maniac. He got that character down. So I mean he was great as Biff, but Biff is such an evil character. I don't like thinking of him as Biff. You know, anything but Biff. But it's just that so we have this group of standard cannon fodder when it comes to the horror slasher films. And one thing that I found very interesting thing about this is that we don't even get set up with kills until nearly about 40 minutes into the movie. We have a whole bunch of April Fool's jokes going off. And some that they did like 3 or 4 times, like the chair.
Like I've never even seen a chair that does that, but
I'm just afraid someone will break their
neck.
Yeah,
exactly.
On it.
Like it's a very well executed stunt roll that they do out of it.
And Thomas Wilson was the one who actually did those. He did that stunt falling back because that was. I mean, he's really good physically. I mean, we saw that with Back to the Future specifically. But I mean, that's a difficult one to do without hurting yourself because the way that it falls back, and all it takes is just for your neck to be in the right position and snap. I mean, and he's not a small guy. Yeah. You know, he his weight could have been put on his neck, and that would have, you know, he would have had the Christopher Reeve thing going. But he pulls it off, and I'm hoping that he had a lot of practice on that before he did it, because it was funny to watch, don't get me wrong, but it was pretty harrowing at times. But I love the fact that the chair actually reconfigures itself, that, you know, it wasn't just that they like saw the legs or anything, but it was designed so that it would come back to form after you dump yourself. But I will say this about Arch, his character in the movie. Who in their right minds sits in a wicker chair to masturbate?
Hey, just what?
Don't knock it till you've tried it.
The only chair in the room, I guess, for him.
Wasn't that a bedroom?
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm sorry, but get comfortable.
So
make sure you have.
I mean, I love that this fully embraced the fact that these are horny college students. Like it went there, and they're all trying to figure out who's going to hook up with who. You've got, one couple that's already a couple when they get there, and a couple people that are hitting on somebody else. But I don't know. I enjoyed the banter and the interplay between the group almost as much as the actual scares in the film.
There's no scares. Not one.
Well, none that are actually scary.
Even then, you know, the way that they cut it was that as soon as something looks like it's going to happen, it would cut away, but not in a way that was showing suspense. It was just like someone decided, oh, you know what, let's just go to this person. I guess the problem is that before I saw this for the podcast, or this time around, I saw a movie called It Follows, which is a new film that's out in theaters right now that was really intense in setting up these kinds of long established thrill scares and stuff like that. And so I was already kind of primed for that. And then here it's like, you know, one character's gets yanked back, but again, it wasn't set up very well. Another character, a person steps up to him, and then it just cuts away. You know, it just, you know, we're supposed to believe that something happened. And by that particular point, even the first time that I saw this, I knew that this wasn't what they think that it was. And the first time we see a body, that gave it away for me. That was a big giveaway, because that just looked fake. I mean, not even like good Friday the 13th fake. I mean, like third rate fake. I mean, did either one of you buy into it by this point? Did y'all believe that this was going to be a slasher?
Well,
film?
Okay. So are you saying, were you believing? Okay, so the name of the movie is April Fool's Day. There's constant pranks going on. So are you saying, did you get sucked in and believe that what was happening was really happening, or did you think it was a prank?
I'll tell you right now that I believe after seeing that body and the fact that they didn't bring in the body, that this was a fake. And that's the problem here, is that they don't leave us with anything substantive for us to believe that there's something really going on. You know, that they have a body that they have, you know, that they can hold on to. Because, again, since they don't have a body, they just happen to see something that looks like a body. It doesn't have the same thing. I mean, and I'm kind of going off of the first Friday the 13th movie at this particular point, where you come across a body that, you know, it's been there for a while, and you know, you can see it, you can touch it, here you don't they don't ever actually encounter real bodies or encounter anything that comes off as a body. Even in the well, the heads just, I'm sorry, I mean, this was shoddily made. I mean, even
better. So you're,
this is the age of Tom Savini.
So you're saying that it looks like secondhand special effects that a hobbyist might have done?
Third rate.
Okay.
Okay, did y'all buy the heads in the well?
I mean, well, their heads in a well. You didn't really stick around to look at them, and it was dark down there. I mean,
and
come
what,
on.
What, I mean, what one, they're not... It's hard. I'm going off of the character reactions. I know it looks fake,
yeah,
but then it's... It's not the highest of 80s special effects
right.
budget if you're going for realism.
Like, we as an audience
that's
know
true.
It looks
so,
fake, but, like, do they believe that it's real?
Yeah.
And yeah, they believe it's real. I mean, you believe that the guy lying next to you on the bed had his dick chopped off. Like, sure.
Okay, that I didn't believe, but, yeah.
Well,
yeah. But, like, well, dude, you're menstruating? What the heck?
Right.
Okay, here's the thing. Like, even at this point, even though the first time I saw it, when these are starting to look really, really, really fake, and I was kind of wondering, okay, is this intended to be, supposed to be really, really fake? Is this trying to make it clear that this is fake? And I decided, well, you know what, this could just all be a April Fool's prank, a very elaborate one. But I was thinking, okay, well, maybe it could turn into something kind of like Gaslight, which is, the spoiler in that one is that a husband that's trying to convince his wife that she's losing her mind so that she'll kill herself so that he didn't have to get a divorce. Maybe it's going to go in that direction, which could be a very, very different thing than what we're seeing with slasher films of the era. You know, it could, you know, this could all be some sort of play. So, all right, let's see where this is going. Where it falls apart is where we end up with it. And the reason behind all this was just awful. It's just simply awful. And we'll get to that in a little bit, but
and I love. Okay, you know, so there's two things happening too, because at the same time as all of this supposed killings are going on, and there are 10 little Indians being winnowed down one by one, mm-hmm. they start picking up on these clues. And Muffy isn't acting like herself, and somebody sees a picture of twin girls, and, you know, so you're, like, as the audience, you're starting to think, like, oh, maybe it's Muffy's crazy twin sister, which then you find the note in the boat about it, and then you see in the basement the height chart on the wall of Muffy and Buffy. And you're like, what? And then you put your head, and you're like, what? And then when she shows up, like, if you buy into it, you buy into it, because she plays crazy with that big knife coming at her
uh-huh.
and everything. And so you're like, holy shit, man, this is it! This is the end! Oh, what's going to happen? And then...
Nothing happens. Yeah.
You get the reveal.
Okay, let's go ahead and do the reveal. Let's talk the reveal.
So they're all just sitting around reading magazines, having tea. Everyone who you thought was dead, turns out they were in on it. But let's talk about the mechanics of it, right? Because how did it really work?
Okay, so from what it sounds like, none of these people were in on it with the exception of the harbor master, the sheriff, or the quote-unquote
yeah.
sheriff. I don't know if if the real sheriff would have been so happy with someone walking around in sheriff's clothing, especially in a hospital, pretending
that
to be
that
a sheriff.
Yeah, that I didn't understand. Like, why did he have to be in the hospital in costume? But...
Yeah, well, the thing was, is it was all... And again, this is where it pisses me off. This was not to convince any of the characters of the plan. Okay. This was to convince the audience. And that's where I say, fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. No. Okay, okay, I would probably even be a little bit more sympathetic if they would actually just break the fourth fucking wall at that particular point, wink
well,
at me.
Well, that happens at the end of the thing. The doll winks at the camera.
No, no, no. We're not talking about that fucking doll. No, this, on top of that, this is a stupid idea. This is a I mean, well, the idea itself is actually
it's a
not
dry
bad,
run
it's
for
the
murder
execution.
The execution. It's a dry run for but the murder with... mystery bed and breakfast.
Why? But why?
Because if she could, why a dry if she run? Could fool the people who are her closest friends, then they could fool anyone.
All but two were recruited into this, but willingly, without prior knowledge.
So
they weren't in on it. They were recruited. And
their moment of death, they were recruited.
Recruited.
So when she showed up to, quote-unquote, kill them, basically she just showed up and said, hey, you want to be in on this prank? And because we saw at the beginning of the movie that they were all so goddamn prank happy, of course they went for it. And she probably said, hey, my family's loaded. If you help this thing work, I'll cut you in on the action.
Well, the fact that this is all to keep the house right there says that she's not as loaded.
Well, no,
as...
it was to, like, she got the house anyway, but she had to prove that she could make it financially viable so she could get the next phase of the trust fund.
Yeah.
Bullshit. It is all bullshit. This is a movie that has a premise and is trying its hardest to wiggle all this bullshit into a very small can, and it can't do that without coming off as completely full of bullshit. This is frustrating all the way through. You know, this is kind of what Scream was trying, you know, the Scream figured out successfully. This was this was trying to be both meta with the slasher films of the 80s, while at the same time trying to serve itself up as one of those films for the audience that it was going for. And unfortunately, because its premise didn't offer it a lot of opportunity, and on top of that, because, you know, this was all based on Paramount needing a horror film off of April Fool's Day because...
Come on,
again,
this is the best movie they could have made. If you're gonna have a horror film based on a holiday, it's like a game based on Clue or a movie based on the game Clue.
Don't,
you know what I mean?
No, don't.
This
don't
is
you...
like...
dare taint Clue
this is like
the, with
talking
the
about this
movie. The
best that they can do with the source material that they had for the pitch. And I think it works because ultimately you as the audience get punked. And whether or not you saw it coming or you say you saw it coming, like, oh yeah, I knew it was all a prank all along and it didn't fool me. Or whether you totally get bought in on it and then you're like, oh, so this isn't a horror movie? I mean, then you got punked.
No. Getting punked is finding out who Kaiser Soze is. That is getting punked. This is insulting. This is flat out insulting. You know, you're talking about, you know, having it kind of come in on you. That's not what this film is doing. This film is using the same trope, or trying to use the same tropes, but fitting it into a package that comes with the actual day. And, you know, I will agree with you that this is the best movie they could have made, because they did make a remake which was even worse than this, because they actually took it seriously. But... That doesn't give it any more credence or any more credibility. This is a useless exercise. This is, you know, because it is punking the audience or not even punking the audience, but it's just insulting the audience, that it gave absolutely no stakes. It doesn't set up any stakes. It doesn't set up any consequences for this. It was all just one elaborate joke on the audience. And if I paid money to see this in theaters, I'd want my money back. I would have demanded my money back, because this thing didn't even give me the auspice of anything kind of anything horror related.
Well, if you bought into the kills or whatever,
but you don't, because you don't see
well,
kills.
Well, okay, so right, but I mean, if you bought into the suspense of the film, like if you got sucked into the suspense and the whodunit of the film, then you got your money's worth, because in the end you find out who done it and what it was all about.
Ken, did you buy into it?
I was buying into it based on thinking it's okay, these are just bad effects, and the clues are just kind of, well, the problem was, as I'm going through the, I have IMDb open, so I'm doing the check to see what else have they been in, and that ended up spoiling the ending for me. Just looking as I was going, it's like, oh, that's what's going on. Okay. And so, like halfway, especially when halfway through, I'm like, what, the 45 minute mark and nobody's dead yet? What kind of horror movie is this? And so, but if you look at it as suspense, it's not that bad. But at the same time, you know, this really strikes me, even though it's coming out, it came out right April Fool's Day weekend in 86. And yet I'm thinking of this movie as more the second movie, well, the first or second movie at a drive-in. And nobody's going to be watching the movie, if you know what I mean here. So
yeah, it sets it up with some horny scenes, and then
yeah,
you know, you just take it from there with your date.
Yeah, and you just, yeah, yeah, you're in the back seat.
Yeah, and I'll give it to you. This is definitely a movie that you're not interested in the movie. And it feels that I don't think that the filmmakers were interested in the movie.
No,
the cast, I think, kind of...
I think the cast is game. They...
Yeah,
the cast is game. I'll grant you that, but the filmmakers themselves, this was lazy. This was shoddily put together. No questioning the needs of the characters towards what this is. This is all just an exercise, and in a way, the people that are getting ripped off is anyone who's seeing this movie. You know,
is it a ripoff if you willingly go see a movie called April Fool's Day? Is that a ripoff? Because the premise of the holiday is that you're going to get a prank pulled on you. So you're literally signing yourself up to have a prank pulled on you. I mean, right? Isn't it buyer beware, caveat emptor here? Like, right? Like, what do you have to complain about?
I don't know. When I saw Independence Day, I didn't see any Brits getting, you know, shot by colonials, so.
Yeah, but you've got the payoff of that speech from Bill Pullman.
Yeah.
Today we celebrate our Independence Day. You got a good patriotic feel out of that.
Which was shoehorned in,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah.
But okay, but again, I could go for a misdirection if they did better with it. If they actually had a misdirection,
I mean, it comes off very, Scooby Doo.
Oh yeah,
it's not even Scooby Doo. That's insulting Scooby Doo, and I don't appreciate that. This is like
I expected it to be the boat captain. because he would have gone away with it as if it wasn't for those kids.
Right. If it weren't for those kids. Meddlesome kids.
Kids.
All right, kids, can we talk about the final scene of the film? I know we skipped over Tom Wilson crapping his pants, which I thought was a great gag, but can we talk about the end slasher moment?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
What's the deal? Because there was a weird vibe between those two, the whole movie, and I was trying to figure it out. And I took it to mean that she had feelings for Muffy.
That's the problem, though. There's like several characters that have right. feelings for Muffy,
and I kind of got the feeling that she was.
No, this is just terrible screenwriting, or there's deleted scenes that would explain.
Or maybe the studio said no, you know, you really can't do a lesbian relationship in this movie, you know, something like that.
No, that's okay, but we can have two guys talk about hiding sausage.
Right, jokingly,
allegedly.
Allegedly.
But you notice when they're doing the quiz, which are you more interested in, lesbians? And it's like it just cuts off.
Yeah,
they're
like, oh, but okay. So she shows up. That character, who's the quiet, bookish one, shows up. She's hiding in Muffy's room, with the Jack in the Box. Muffy staggers in drunk, and like. Is psyching herself up to, she's like cranking it really slow because she knows it's going to be a scare, and then does it. And then the other girl, the blonde girl, comes out of the shadows and seemingly slits her throat. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
I knew the movie was almost over, and I'm like, what? Okay, so you, like, that's the perfect prank to have it be. Like, you go through this movie
somebody dies.
I'll tell you right now. Yeah. I'll tell you right now. If it would have went there, I would have loved it. I'll be honest. If it would have ended with someone actually dying, you know, that this prank was the tipping point for someone and they lost it, then there would have been a consequence. But no, it was just yet another prank.
I mean, it would have made sense if she was the last girl.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that there's another movie that kind of does the same thing, April Fool's Day. I don't know if y'all have seen David Fincher's The Game.
Oh, with what's his name?
Michael Douglas.
Yes. I mean, it kind of follows the same thing, except that they set the stakes up much better. A much better payoff, and the ending is ambiguous, meaning that we don't know if, you know, if something is yet still ominous about what's happened, even though we feel like we've been punked. April Fool's Day doesn't have that. It feels like it was just throwing a bunch of pranks out there. It was half-assed made, is the best way I could say it. They could have pulled this off. They really could have. This would have been a very awesome, different thing in the slasher horror type, but they didn't go far enough. They didn't push this premise far enough. They didn't try to set up something interesting or create genuine suspense. They were taking the tatters of what was left of the Friday the 13th franchise, and decided to try something different, which I'm always for. But again, they just didn't push it. They didn't stretch the limitations of this concept. But you know, it is what it is.
I guess the thing that I like the most about this movie is that you really do get to enjoy them kind of being friends, whereas sometimes with horror films they start to turn on each other and there's recriminations, and that does happen a little bit in this one, but at the end they kind of like all laugh it off. Or the other thing that would have happened would be they're all playing pranks but only on like one person who's like the butt of all the jokes, and then he becomes the suspect of like he's the one who's killing them off one by one because he's sick of being the butt of all the jokes, or she's sick of being the butt of all the jokes.
Yeah, you know what would have been awesome? This would have been the ending that I would have loved for April Fool's Day. Okay, so everything's set up. We have the reveal that it's all been a huge prank, but here's the thing: that all this time that it's Muffy that thinks that she's pulling off this elaborate prank, everyone is working together in order to kill her and make it look like it was one of her pranks that did it.
Mm. Or it was, we get the reveal that Skip is actually related to her.
Yeah.
He kills her because he knows that he'll get
all the
whatever goes to her in the will.
Yeah. I mean, just create some semblance of either karma or some sort consequence. That's all I'm asking for. It's just some consequence. Any consequence. That's all. And that's the thing that this movie doesn't have. And because there's no consequence, it doesn't have any suspense for me. It doesn't have any payoff. That would make this satisfying. But again, I guess I'm in the minority on this one, and I'll just leave it at that. But is there anything else we want to bring up before we call this one?
No, let's call it.
Okay, Kent, Lobster, do you? Well, since this is
an art house legend, film.
April Fool's audience.
This film will never be considered a great of cinema. It will never be one of the greats.
Only
36% tomato meter beaches.
Well, okay, let's flip it around then. Do you think it deserves to be given that lower rating? Or, in retrospect, coming back to it after 20 odd years, how do you feel?
Since this is
close to 30 years now.
Yeah. 29.
Well, since this is an April Fool's Day episode, I'll go first.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, this is a premise that I think could work. It really could. I've always asked, could you actually make a horror film where everyone survives? And I honestly think that you can. And maybe even do it in this type of premise. Okay, as long as you create consequences, as long as you create stakes that are actually interesting and convey a genuine threat. Having half-assed body effects and no sense of pacing, no sense of timing, no sense of film direction, that's not going to do it. You got to bring your A game, especially when you're doing something this different. They didn't do it right, but that's on this film. Could it be done right? It could, but it's going to have to take a new filmmaker, someone that's willing to take some chances, and it could still have that kind of campy feel that this movie has. And that's the thing that I think is the best part of it, is that the cast actually look like they're having fun. The cast look like they're enjoying themselves. It's very loose. You feel that these could be friends, more than I could say for a lot of the characters in the Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street films. It was all on the crew. It was all on the direction, the writing. That just needs to be better. And if they do it better, I would go for it, but not this one.
I think it. I agree. It could have been executed better, but at the same time, I remember the '80s as very much a throw out stuff really quick because kids these days will buy anything, and this is a product of that of its time, unfortunately. It could have been better, but at the same time, they were just. It could have been worse. Just put you that way. like I said, the actors looked like they were having fun. The actors looked like they gave a crap, which is important in a lot of movies where you just know people are there for a paycheck. They're having fun, and they're selling bad effects really well. So it doesn't deserve this low of a score, but it doesn't deserve highest praise or anything. So, yeah, Lobster.
I mean, to me, this was an enjoyable film. I'm not a huge horror fan, mostly because it's either too gory, and I'm not particularly squeamish, but I just get kind of like inured to it where it just doesn't really affect me. Or it's like too coincidental, like almost the like Final Destination level of absurdity where like, oh, you know, the guy falls off the dock at that moment, is crushed by the boat, and you know, it just sets up like, you know, you have to have this like perfect storm of circumstances to set up the situation that you need for everything to kind of like go the movie's way. So I like that this movie takes both of those and kind of turns it on its head. It's gory, but the gore is fake. It looks fake, and you find out that it is fake. And the weird coincidence, you know, it turns out that it's all planned. It's all they were in on it. And in the end, there is no murder most foul for this horror film, which I actually really enjoyed. And I said it kind of like dares the audience to be mad at it, which if you watch, you know, John Oliver's little piece on April Fool's Day, which is basically don't be a dick, you know, that was don't do that. That is bad. It just is really kind of entertaining in that way. Now, I think, would it have been cool if like the last scene in the film actually paid off and had a murder? Sure. Do I need a doll to wink at the camera to show that it was all a big joke? I didn't really need that. I can like buy everything else, and I can even buy the fact that, you know, she wanted a little bit of revenge on Buffy and wanted to prank her into thinking that she was going to get killed. But even that, like, I don't know. But I enjoyed it. This is, to me, this is like on the cusp of freshness on like a Rotten Tomatoes score, just not quite there because it is cheesy 80s horror. So, but I enjoyed it.
Well, that puts us to the end of our April Fool's Day episode. We'll be getting back to our normal regular scheduled Art House Legends stuff with our next one. But at this point, this is Eric.
This is Kent.
This is John Lobster.
And
April Fools.
Thank you for listening. If you want to leave us feedback, go to gunnageek.com and you will find all of our contact information and other shows. The music heard on this podcast is by Kevin MacLeod and can be found at incompetech.com. The opinions heard on this podcast are those of the individual host and do not represent Legend Stream Canada or Gunna Geek. No infringement is intended.